Hey there, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo, courtesy of NintendoWorldReport.com. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and joining me on this episode, fan favorite Evan Birchfield.
Hey, hi, hey, did anybody hear that Sin and Punishment came out on the Virtual Console?
Shut up, Evan, shut up.
No one heard?
We have structure to this show, you can't just leap into the subject.
I just want to make sure everyone knows.
Yeah, and the other guy here today is Jonathan Metz.
Hello.
Anyway.
I went low today because last week I was accused of always having some kind of high pitched reply.
Well, you are going through puberty for the second time.
Yeah, it's starting to take hold.
Yep.
Yeah.
My voice is changing.
Right.
Poor guy.
And first up today is new business, and Evan wants to talk about Halo 3, so I'm gonna give him 2 seconds. Go.
Oh God! You're just gonna
Done.
Say
you're
I
over.
Have to talk. Oh, jeez. Come on. Hey, Halo 3, people need to understand. It's good. Ugh. I've played it for about 20 hours over the
really,
past
Really, Evan?
Week.
Really? An established franchise with multi-million selling units is good? Breakthrough.
Yeah. Well, no, but see, here's the thing. A lot of people don't think so. Well, this isn't the right place for it, really, but
it's
yeah,
really
that's what
not.
I've been playing. But my other new business is, of course, Metroid Prime 3, which I'm not done with. I got it late. And
Speaking of shitty games, Sin and Punishment...
Hello, Sin and Punishment. Like, did no one know that came out of the Virtual Console today? Like,
we heard.
Okay.
I heard about it.
Because everybody ought to download that immediately. It's great. But, Metroid Prime 3 is not shitty, by the way. P.S. That's it. That's all my new business.
From the really? Desk of Evan point. Birchfield.
Metroid Prime 3, not shitty. You can put that in the box.
Yeah.
So, what about you, Johnny? What are you playing?
Okay, so I've had a weird week. Last week I bought the first PC game since Warcraft 3, which was
okay,
like
let me guess.
4 or 5 years ago.
Let me guess what it is. Orange Box.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's such a good deal. You get 5 games for $45 if you pre-purchase it, which I did on Steam. And
yeah.
The cool thing about getting it on Steam is that I can go ahead and download and start playing all the parts that have already been released, whereas if I got it at retail, I couldn't get any of that stuff until the day it came out. So
right.
I've been playing Half-Life 2 for the first time ever.
It's
and,
good.
And it's interesting. I never really played Half-Life 1. I played for maybe 30 minutes and wasn't into it. So now I've played several hours of Half-Life 2, and I'm definitely enjoying it. It doesn't run as well on my PC as I thought it would, and my PC is certainly not a gaming PC, because, I mean, obviously I don't play many PC games. But it has integrated video card, et cetera, et cetera. But it is a fast PC, and it has a ton of RAM, and I thought, you know, this game's 3 years old, it'll probably run okay. And it doesn't. I had to turn down the graphics considerably to get a decent frame rate.
Well, keep in mind that the way integrated video cards work is that it's actually borrowing RAM from your, you know, regular
right.
RAM.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a combination of, one, I don't have a real video card, and two, it's basically running with less system memory than I really have because it's having to borrow some of that for video memory. So I'm actually right now, because of Team Fortress 2 especially, which I've also been playing the beta for, and it's really fun, but not only am I really terrible at it because I haven't played an online game in years and years, but also my system runs it so poorly. I mean, we're talking maybe 5 or 10 frames per second on top of network latency that I really can't even compete. I mean, I can't do anything in the game because I'm running so much slower than everyone else. So I'm thinking about springing for an actual graphics card, and I'm just looking for something decent that's really super cheap, so maybe in a couple weeks I'll have an update on that. But
right.
Anyway, Half-Life 2 is an interesting game. It's a lot scarier than I expected it to be. I mean, there's kind of a Resident Evil 4 vibe around it in that, there's just always this feeling that something really bad could happen to you at any moment. And a lot of it is things kind of jumping through windows at you, but also it's not just that, but there's also just a really good atmosphere to it. So that's cool. I would say the big complaint I have about it 5 or 6 hours in is that it does have some platforming elements, and they're bad enough to make me really appreciate once again how good the platforming is in the Metroid Prime games.
There's some bad platforming in Half-Life 1, I remember, but it wasn't. It was always like you have to just wait till the very last minute to jump, otherwise you weren't going to make it.
And I'm yeah, there's no minimal, there's no but. Leeway at all in the jumping.
Yeah, can you use Steam on a Mac? Do they have the Mac version of the Orange Box? Unfortunately,
you can't get Orange Box on the Mac, which is why I'm going to play. Oh, you can't even get. No, like the service is no. Like I think you might be able to buy Orange Box for Mac, but I know Steam doesn't support it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that most of the Half-Life 2 stuff released so far is available on the Mac. But
yeah, I know Half-Life's on Mac, but I don't think I know that Steam for a fact is not compatible. However, GameTap is. So if they host Orange Box, then you can use that.
I kind of doubt that.
We'll see. I don't think that's going to happen, considering Steam exists already.
Well, one last note about Half-Life 2. You know, they are releasing Orange Box on 360 and I think PS3.
Yeah.
And of course, Half-Life 2 came out on the original Xbox. It was one of the last games that ever came out on the original Xbox.
Yeah.
And it's kind of made me think lately, why couldn't they put the Orange Box on Wii? I mean, if Half-Life 2 will run on the original Xbox, then it could certainly be made to run on Wii, which is more powerful. And you could have a really cool control scheme. And I know some of the stuff like Team Fortress 2, obviously, is really heavily based on online, and that's not likely to happen on Wii. But some of the other stuff, I think Portal is mainly a single-player game. Half-Life 2 certainly is mainly a single-player game. I think it would be really compelling to put that stuff on Wii. With the controller, and the graphics would be serviceable, at least.
Well, here's my question on that. Does the Metroid Prime 3 control scheme with Wii Remote pointing, moving with the nunchuck, does that actually work with a much more Twitch game? Obviously, it didn't work with Red Steel. Will it work with Half-Life? I don't know about that.
You know what? Here's the thing, because, Metroid Prime 3, while supposedly has a great control scheme for first-person shooters, I wouldn't know. Mike hasn't given me his copy yet. You know, we're probably, and I say this without having direct confirmation, but I hear things saying that Time Splitters 4 is going to be on Wii. So, obviously, I think Free Radical is a very competent developer, and if anyone's going to do it right on Wii, it's going to be them.
Yeah, and the Time Splitters games are pretty twitchy.
Yeah, so sure, if it could work there, then it could
moving
work.
Moving the Wii Remote with your wrist is not the same as moving a mouse, because with a mouse you can actually tell how much you're going to be moving to the left and the right. With the Wii Remote, there's no resistance, your hand's not touching anything. And to be honest, the way that it works with the very slow movement to the left and the right in Metroid Prime 3 works so much better than what I saw in Red Steel or anything else that's in first person on Wii so far.
You're mixing up a lot of weak arguments, Evan. First of all, Red Steel is a fundamentally different control scheme. They did it with the, they use the acceleration of the remote and not with the actual pointing function of it. So it's a complete mess. And also, as far as Wii Remote versus mouse, I think that part of it is actually the advantage goes to the Wii Remote, because you literally just point to where you want to go on the screen. And as far as the turning speed, that's totally adjustable.
Sure. I'm not saying I don't want to see it. I'm just weary of it, because I think Metroid Prime 3 is a much different game, and way that they set up enemies in the room is just way different from the way they ever do anything in Half-Life. So,
right.
That's just my opinion.
Well, that's
for
why
now.
I say that like Time Splitters would be a good test for real first-person shooters on the Wii.
Yeah. I agree. And I'll be one of the first people to rent or buy that, even. I've always liked the Time Splitter games for multiplayer, but if they don't have some sort of online component, nowadays it's going to be hard to find four people who want to sit and play Wii. So if you want to sit down and play a first-person shooter, you're going to sit down and play Halo. So
Let me wrap up my new business really quick. The other game that comes with the Orange Box, it's really more like a demo, but it's called Peggle Extreme, and it's a PopCap game. It is so addictive. I mean, it's digital crack, and it's basically It's kind of a slightly more strategic form of Pachinko or Plinko, the game on The Price is Right. And it's very much based on physics. Like, you shoot the ball at a peg, and then you try to guess where it's going to bounce off. And certain, you have to, in order to beat the stage, there are certain pegs you have to hit. And some of them are hard to get to because there are a lot of other pegs above them. So you have to try to figure out where to launch the ball so that it will trickle down and hit that one. And some of the stages have moving blocks that you have to hit. Some of them have portals, because it's based on the game Portal, and so the ball will teleport to another part on the map. And there's some really, really cool stuff in there, and I've spent many hours wasted on it this past week. So if you like that kind of casual game, you should check it out. I'm almost positive that there's a free version of it, a trial version, and then you can pay to upgrade to the real deal. But you should check that out. Peggle Extreme comes with the orange box, but you can also just get plain Peggle from PopCap Games.
Well, I've been playing a game that I've talked about many a time on this show, but I just decided to play it again, Killer 7. Really? No, really. I mean, a friend of mine was hanging out at my place. My buddy Casper was there, and he'd never heard of Killer 7. So, obviously, he had this. Well, yeah, shock. Someone hadn't heard of Killer 7. Game. I know, right? And so basically we popped it in the Wii and played Killer 7 for about a good 3 or 4 hours.
And Carl, sometime I need to borrow that from you, because I've only played it at E3 and I didn't like it there. But
you know what? I'm going to mail you the game.
Okay. Good.
All right.
I will play through it.
All right.
It's good.
Evan, have you played Killer 7?
Yeah.
What'd you think of it?
I'm a hardcore fan. I think that it's one of those games where the images and how you encounter the images is much more important than the gameplay. It's one of those games where it deliberately throws things at you that are confusing, not for the sake of confusing you, but for just kind of it's like a barrage of the senses. Kind of like what I think a film by Matthew Barney might be, or something along those lines.
Yeah. So in other words, it's full of philosophical bullshit and it has bad control, so obviously Evan likes it.
No. One thing it does not have, sir, is bad controls. Yeah. The controls are actually excellent. Okay, all right. Do you think Metroid Prime has bad controls?
Are you comparing those two games? Because they're completely different.
Oh, yeah, but they are not so different, actually. Because
Killer 7 is on rails, dude. You push a button to walk forward and another to walk backwards.
But when it comes to the actual shooting, it's exactly like Metroid Prime.
Okay, that's fine. I'm talking about the movement controls. The whole navigation and the way you choose which path you want to take is a complete mess.
Yeah,
it is in no way a mess. With this. No, because when someone insults the faith, I gotta defend. All right, because how is this convoluted? You press A to go forward, you press B to go backwards. When you come to a junction, you use the analog stick to pick your direction. That is in no way confusing.
I thought it was.
I think it's just a reorganization of our accepted principles for first person shooters. It's not what people expected it to be, and in fact, it's not even first person when you're in that when you're walking. It's third. So. I think that for a lot of people it is a mess because you aren't given control. It's not messy because you have tons of control. It's messy because it forces you to think less. But that's a powerful thing for a game to do, and it's daring to say that we're going to put you in this big world and you can't go see the corners. You can only stand in the middle. I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. It just is different.
Well, I mean, I've played through the game maybe 4 times, so maybe I'm a little biased, but...
Well, you obviously love it. I think that's because of the experience of playing it, because of the amount of thought that you have to put into it, which is different from other levels of thought, in that you're only given a few things to do, and it's all about what you see and how you do it along the way, and what you hear and what you experience, and how the game is kind of on a loop, and the levels are on a loop. I think that that's just it's like mental feedback. I think that's a really unique vision of a game, and I think No More Heroes looks very good too. So
it really does, and I think we actually put up a video of that the other day on the site. So if you want to check it out, head over to NintendoReport.com. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's move on into community. Enough bullshitting about Killer 7. Although I could go on all day.
obviously.
First up is Mike's Crazy Mailbag, as read by Evan.
Hey guys, so Mike's Crazy Mailbag, and you guys can send in any letter that you want. The first letter that I get, that's the one I'm going to read. So I'm reading this letter. The first one I got was from Rabical, and he says, are you aware that in Hermione Granger's home country of the UK, the age of consent is 16? So what gray area does that put Johnny in? Well, you know, I don't know what that means for Johnny, but overall, I think he needs to get his butt on a plane over to the UK as soon as possible. And remember, guys, whatever letter you send in to Mike's Crazy Mailbag, the first one that I get, that's the one that I'll read, all right?
That's a fantastic Mike impression.
Bravo.
That's all the energy I can spend on the rest of the podcast.
Evan has just redeemed himself from the new business segment.
So yeah, Johnny, I guess you're in the clear because 16 is the age of consent in Europe.
Yeah, well, I'm from Alabama, so there is
you're from Alabama, so that's a completely different story. I don't know, Johnny.
I do what I want.
Okay, well, let's go on ahead to the extended listener mail. This isn't last week's show. We can't talk about, you know, we can't talk about that stuff again. Our letter today is from Ryan, who says, I want to ask, the game I want to ask about is Osama Monogatari, or King Story. The game seems to be flying under many a radar, but it has my interest because it essentially looks like a Pikmin clone with Wii controls. I love both Pikmin games, and they seem like a perfect fit for Wii.
I actually have a response to this question. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I think that any game that supports terrorism needs to be banned. So I say no to this game.
No, down anyway, with the Osama game.
Yeah, Osama video games. None of that.
So Osama Monogatari is a it's sort of like Pikmin. It can also kind of be described as Pikmin crossed with maybe SimCity. With some, if you ever imported Dosh and the Giant, or you live in Japan and Europe, it's also kind of similar to that. Basically, you play a little boy who is one day encountered by a knight from this faraway land, who basically tells him that he is the king of this land, or he's looking for the king of this land, but he doesn't know who it is, so he has to put a crown on everyone he sees, and if the crown lights up, then that's the king. So he puts the crown on the little boy, and it lights up, and he's like, oh, my liege, you must come with me. And so he takes him to this faraway land, a.k.a. his basement. And so basically you lord over this this country, and you bring the villagers around, you build little, you know, you build little edifices and all that sort of thing. And basically you run this town, Pikmin style, also SimCity style. And it looks cool. It's got great graphics. The cutscenes are very Disney-esque. And I think that if you're into something like that, then this is definitely the game for you. It has not, to my knowledge, been announced for the States yet. It's being published by Marvelous in Japan, and the guys developing it are the same ones from Hotel Dusk and, what's the name of that DS game that Evan hates?
That great game... What the hell is the name of that game?
Another code, what is that? Or something like that?
Is it another code?
Something
or
like
is it
that.
Something else? Oh,
we're gonna get so much crap for this for not being able to remember the name of that.
Oh
code.
God,
it's a pretty forgettable game.
Trace memory.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Another code was the Japanese name.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. So what you just like everything you were saying about this game was really interesting and awesome until you said it was by the guys that made Trace Memory, and that's when as soon as it went. But I'm looking at the screenshots now. It looks kind of cartoony. Looks nice. I'd play it. But I don't know if they can develop their way out of a paper bag. So.
Well, Hotel Dusk is really good. So maybe this will be good.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about the news, so stick around. Okie doke, guys, and we're back for the news. First up, Virtual Console Mondays. Sin and Punishment, Super Mario Bros. Lost Levels, doesn't really matter, let's move on.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 blah. Well, so this is our chance to talk about Sin and Punishment, right? Like, I get to talk about it now?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can talk about it now. Go for
it. Okay, guys, this game is awesome. Like, it's great. I'm so upset that Nintendo didn't let it out until now, and then they strung us along telling us that they weren't going to put any import titles on the Virtual Console, when that's the entire, like, that's the greatest thing about the Virtual Console, is that it's got the ability to give us games from all over. And so, to me, this is just a tiny bit of hope that maybe Mother 3 might be on its way if they're listening to us complaining about these games. I don't know how they would ever get... The Mother 3 obviously is not coming to the Virtual Console, but the fact that also one of our next news items, Lucas from Mother 3, is going to be in Smash Brothers, they just seem to be tantalizing us with this crap.
You can't just launch into another news stories, Evan.
I'm not launching. I'm still talking about Sin and Punishment. I'm 1,200 points.
Okay, please continue talking about Sin and Punishment.
1,200 points is just perfect. Like, it's a higher price. It's worth it, though.
I think Mother 1 is a lot more likely, because there's already an existing translation for it that Nintendo did. So if they can just track that down, then they'll be good to go on that. It should be fairly easy to load that in.
But yeah, I'd buy it. Right.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm excited about that possibility. But I mean, let's not jump ahead of ourselves. This week we have Lost Levels, which, in my opinion, not worth buying. It doesn't interest me, but really hardcore Mario fans should definitely get it. But that's who it was made for. Really, really hardcore Super Mario Brothers fans. Because the game is basically brutally difficult. Brutally.
Yeah, it's a remix of the first game, but for maniacs.
Right. Yes.
But this is the one that was sold in Japan as Super Mario Brothers 2.
Correct.
And right. It was then put on the Super Mario All-Stars as the Lost Levels, but didn't it have different graphics when it was on All-Stars? Didn't it have the updated graphics?
Yes, it did.
Yes.
This is a unique version that we have.
It has been released in America in roughly the original form when they did Super Mario Brothers Deluxe for Game Boy Color. The Lost Levels they didn't advertise this at the time. It's really strange. That game was two games in one. Seems like a really good deal, right? And yet they didn't really advertise the Lost Levels. It was an unlockable feature. But
they didn't include all the worlds.
They're all in there. But I could be wrong. I never beat the game, because that's not physically possible. But it's in there, and of course it's slightly modified for Game Boy Color screen dimensions and things like that, but that's pretty close to the original. But certainly this is the first time we've gotten the authentic original version of Super Mario Brothers 2 in America.
Right, so, and you're also paying that import fee of 100 points
for this game. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, not a big deal
so
with
basically,
me.
Apparently not for Evan, but because Evan's living
it's
large.
It's going to cost me 0 points, because I'm not going to buy it.
Right.
Sin and Punishment, is brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
Brilliant. It's fantastic. It's one of the best N64 games. And this is the first chance, really, for most people to get to play it. So you should take advantage of it. It's an excellent game.
Johnny and I were talking about it's a really difficult game to get your head around, because you're not only are you moving to dodge and jump and all of these other things, but you also have to aim, and these two aspects of the game are very separate parts of your brain. It's not like moving in a Star Fox game, or even in a Turok game, or anything like that. The best description that I've come up for Sin and Punishment is that it's a mix between Star Fox 64 and Gunstar Heroes. And it's got the shooting action of Gunstar Heroes, the frenetic amount of enemies, stupid story that doesn't make any sense, and then the kind of on-rails aspect of Star Fox 64 with the reticle on the screen, aiming and all of that. So to me, it's just Gunstar Heroes 2, the 3D version. It's awesome.
It really is probably basically a 3D version of Gunstar Heroes. But I would say, if you've never played the game or have never seen it in motion, the easiest way to describe it is very much like what Evan just said. It's like Star Fox 64, but instead of the... In which you have this... You're kind of moving on rails, and you have this limited area of movement that you can move around within. But the big difference is that in Star Fox 64, your targeting reticle moves with your ship. So you don't have to think about targeting. You just point your ship to whatever you want to shoot at and hit the button. In Sin and Punishment, movement and aiming are separate. So you can move around in the environment, but you also have this Wii kind of, very much like a Wii style of aiming cursor on the screen that you move around with a joystick, that's completely separate from your physical movement in the environment.
Yeah.
So It's much more challenging than Star Fox 64.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It is.
So definitely a Sin and Punishment sequel would be a great fit for Wii.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. It would fit very, very well to Wii. That's what we were saying back when we did Dream Games, Carl, and you were describing this untitled game, yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, well basically you're asking for Sin and Punishment. So you need to pick this up, Carl. I think you're going to like it a lot.
I wish I could play it, but my university's Wi-Fi does not reach my dorm room, so I can't get to the online store.
Well,
I
have to buy the Wii adapter. Take your Wii to Obi's house and download it there.
Yeah.
It's a very
popular idea. Do that.
Yeah. I'm officially in love with Treasure, and I cannot wait for Mischief Makers to come out. Mischief Makers is one that I would probably only recommend for fans, but that is a classic, beautiful N64 game side-scroller with an amazing mechanic. Treasure is so good at making these excellent little genre games that don't reach beyond what their main goal is, which is just action. And I love that. So... Treasure is one of the best developers out there, and their stories, the problem is their stories are stupid. They're just terrible, and there's a ton of dialogue in Sin and Punishment, and none of it makes sense. It is the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
When I had it on N64, I remember having trouble figuring out whether the main character, Saki, was a boy or a girl.
Yeah.
The voice acting is so terrible, and the character design is really
androgynous.
So yeah. Androgynous, yeah.
Well, yeah. Moving on, though, into the actual news. First up today, Evan revealed it, but new Super Smash Bros. Character, Lucas from Mother 3.
Woot.
Replacing Ness, question mark?
No.
Who knows?
Ness will still be in there.
I think Ness will be revealed eventually.
I mean, yeah. Smash Bros. Is definitely not above having a palette swap, so...
But I don't know if there's enough evidence that this is a palette swap because Lucas doesn't seem to be doing anything that we've seen Ness do. Some of the, definitely his body shape is in style with Ness, and the color of his attacks looks similar, but he's shooting a sort of a blue energy ball that doesn't look like anything that I've seen Ness do. So
actually, Ness did have a blue energy ball.
Which one? But he had the one that was the directional, the up B attack. Is that what you're referring to? Because that's not what he's doing there at all. It doesn't have a trail. It's coming out of the outside. He's standing there and he's shooting it. So
I agree with Evan. I mean, they haven't announced the special moves for Lucas, but from the screenshots they put on there, it looks like he has different special moves. And of course, they could have changed Ness's special moves. So these could still be essentially the same as the new Ness special moves, if Ness is even in the game. But we just don't know at this point. But it does look like he has different moves than Ness had in the last game.
This is one of the least exciting character announcements we've ever gotten. I'll say that. Because all it is saying, by the way, you guys don't get Mother 3, but we'll give you Lucas.
Hey, actually, if you think about what happened with Fire Emblem in Melee, they kind of introduced these characters to the American audience, and then later they followed that up with bringing the games over finally. So this could be kind of a portent. Is that the word?
Yeah, it could be. A portent? Yeah.
Yeah, a foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope. Cross your fingers, you know.
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be nice. But also in line with Smash Bros. News, David Hayter is lending his voice to Snake in Brawl. Which is weird because Smash Bros. Never had voice acting before, but then again, it is a Nintendo game. What characters are there to voice?
Smash Bros. Did have some very limited voice acting. You had the announcer, and then some of the characters had little taunts. You know, Peach says, Peach!
Yeah, Fox and Falco, and yeah.
Yeah, but David Hayter giving the voice seems to indicate that the also from what we've seen from the website seems to indicate that the cinema scenes are going to be a lot more in depth and that the main story is going to be a lot more fleshed out. The main game, the single player game, which is dumb. It's like if we haven't learned anything from Halo, it's that single player should be left alone. You know, you play through it once, it's fun, leave it. Go on to multiplayer. And Super Smash Bros. Has it wrong. They're saying, well, multiplayer is what we're here for, but we're going to focus a lot on the single-player experience, which is, I think it's backwards.
So. Well, Evan, you're complaining about options here. You're saying that, oh, no, I don't want them to focus on single-player because that's dumb. But what you're forgetting is that just as much as you're getting put into multiplayer, probably more. The fact is that Smash Bros. Gameplay has already been heavily refined. It's not like they have so much to work on in that regard.
I just think that Melee isn't perfect as a multiplayer because of the... I'm with that little pack of fans who think that there was too much time spent on single player, because that the multiplayer options, while great and definitely more fleshed out than the N64 Smash, there's some balance issues here and there. There's some things where there's only like a top tier of like 4 or 5 characters out of the 20. That's kind of disappointing.
Evan, you're the first person I've heard say that too much effort was put into the single player mode of Smash Brothers Melee.
Well, I've heard it before. I'm repeating. Yeah. I'm repeating stuff I've already heard. I just happen to agree with it. So
okay.
Moving on. All right. Well, don't trust the subject at hand, though. David Hayter. David Hayter is a pretty well liked voice actor in the community. So it's always nice to see that he's contributing something.
Another interesting thing about David Hayter is that he's a screenwriter for many different comic book movies. He's kind of a
He co-wrote X2 and X-Men. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was able to save some movies from being terrible by doing last-minute rewrites, and his script for Watchmen was called by Alan Moore to be as close as possible to actually getting a good Watchmen film, even though Alan Moore will never go see the movie no matter what. So,
and that movie is in production right now.
Yeah.
Yes, by Zack Snyder.
Right.
Yeah.
But who will probably have a tragic accident via voodoo, because as we all know, Alan Moore is a magician.
Yes, and somehow he says voodoo magic has prevented Watchmen from being put on the screen for the last 20 years.
Yeah. Anyway. Next news story. We failed to mention this last week. I think it came out like the day that we recorded. Fatal Frame is going to be on Wii, and here's the best part about it, though, because yeah, that's nice. Fatal Frame's a cool franchise. Blah blah blah. Who cares? But developed by Grasshopper Manufacture.
Suda 51.
So who you gotta admit, he's a number.
Okay, let me explain that, though. There's a reason behind it. Oh. Because 51. If you were to translate the word 5 and 1 in Japanese, it's Go and Ichi, which is his first name, Goichi. So Goichi is 5-1.
Oh, so 51. It's clever.
It's not a nickname. Yeah. It's not an assumed name, Evan. That's his name, Goichi.
That's his name.
It simply translates to 51. That's what his parents named him.
His parents named him 51.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got clarification on that one.
It's like the kid who it's like the kid who legally changed his name to Bass Fishing in America. I wonder where he is now. Anyway.
Well, he's not making Fatal Frame for Wii, I can tell you that much.
Nope. Yeah. Cuz that's Suda 51.
That's Suda 51. But you gotta admit, like, it's a really good fit.
Yeah, Fatal Frame is a game about taking pictures of ghosts. It's a survival horror game.
And, you know, Suda 51 has proved himself over and over again that he is an auteur of weird.
Yes. Agree.
So, this is his time to shine. And, of course, it's great that they're not just giving it to some know-nothing studio who's just going to port the first game over with crappy graphics.
Nope. He's going to make an all-new game with crappy graphics.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Yep, well, yeah, it's going to be good. We know it'll be good, and I'm excited for the announcement, but yeah. Pwned, maybe, Carl? Maybe just a little pwned?
You're going to be taking pictures of just ghosts made out of 5 polygons, and Carl will say, oh my god, so artistic! Ah!
I'll just say this right now, Killer 7 had better graphics than Resident Evil 4.
Okay, so that's the strangest, dumbest thing I've ever heard you say.
Yeah.
And I can defend that to the death. It's a better game than Resident Evil 4.
Okay, well, let's move on to another topic before the entire world falls upon you.
The last story today is Retro Studios. Obviously, we talked about this, I think it was a few weeks ago when the game first came out. But Metroid Prime 3 has a reference to Metroid Dread, which was a app name for the project, because it never really got to the surface. Basically, it was a game for DS that was supposed to show up at E3 06, I think? Maybe 05, I don't know.
05.
But it never got there. Then it was supposed to be showing up at GDC, never made it. Basically, we've heard about it, but we've never seen it. But there was a reference to it in Metroid Prime 3 saying something about Project Dread being close to completion. When asked about this, though, Retro says, no, it's coincidence.
Well, what they're going
to do with Metroid Dread.
Okay, move along with this year. Their explanation is that that was referring to some other element of the story in Metroid Prime 3, and that element of the story at the last minute was taken out of the game for some reason, and they accidentally left that reference in. So it's referring to something completely different, but it's not in there. I mean, it could certainly be a legitimate explanation, but it's also a very convenient explanation if they were trying to cover this up.
And it just is too obvious when they actually say Metroid Project Dread is nearing completion, which is something that people have been internet rumor mongering about for the past 2 years. Retro doesn't live in a bubble, and I just call bullshit on that. I think it's stupid.
Honestly, I think this may be a hot coffee type of incident where some programmer or writer left it in there and didn't tell his boss, and it kind of got by because it's so obscure and because there's so many little text boxes throughout the game.
There are. There's
in that interview, and I think it was Steven Totillo who did the interview. I mean, he was so coy about it.
He really was. Yes. Like, he didn't do a whole lot to quell the speculation.
No.
Yeah. Like it was like yeah, totally a coincidence. But I have no more to say on the subject. Like, come on.
Yeah. No, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. But that's not because I'm hopeful. I just think that there's no guarantee that there's actually a Metroid Dread game. It's just I know that reference in there was deliberately put there by them, and that their denial is just retarded. Something was called Metroid Dread at one time, and it's been called that for the past 2 years. Maybe that was going to be the name of Metroid Prime 3. Who knows? Either way, they're leading people on. That's what I think.
Well, you know, the way that Nintendo is so secretive, it wouldn't surprise me if the people at Retro actually wanted this to be a hint about an upcoming game, and they put it in there, and Nintendo didn't catch it until after the games were already burned. And Nintendo got really angry because it's a PR snafu, and it's not supposed to be revealed yet, and so they basically told Retro to cover up their tracks. I think that's a distinct possibility. Knowing the way I do that Nintendo works, it wouldn't surprise me at all, because they're so secretive about things like that. And when things get out, they really try to hush it up. Things rarely get out about Nintendo that they don't want to get out. But if it did, I can see them going to that kind of a measure to cover it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Well, we may never get a true Metroid on DS, but we are getting a Zelda, because Phantom Hourglass was released today, the day of recording, on the DS. And we're actually going to be talking about the evolution of the Zelda series in general when we come back from this break, so stay tuned. Alright guys, and we're back for our last segment. It's the evolution of the Zelda franchise. Do we think it's going in a good direction, the wrong direction, or is it even just getting stale? Johnny, I'm going to start with you.
Well, do you want to read the email that we got? Or part of it?
Yes, we got a very interesting email from, I believe his name is Adolf.
No relation.
let's go past that. He says, look, I have no problems with Nintendo making casual games, hardcore games, however it looks like Phantom Hourglass is and he says it's a retardation of the Zelda franchise. He goes on to say that it's like, they've made it painfully easy, that they've dumbed it down for casuals, and that they're completely going against the Zelda fanboys and all the faithful by making this game for the brain age kids, basically. So yeah, he thinks it's going in the completely wrong direction.
Well,
do we agree with that?
I don't know, because I haven't really played it in ages. I've played very, very little of it, and I will say that I'm not terribly enthusiastic about it. For some reason, I just haven't had that feeling of anticipation that I usually get with a new Zelda game, but I'm sure I'll pick it up, and it's probably great. And I don't know. I think it's really doing an injustice to Nintendo to get really defensive anytime they do anything major to one of their games, because I think that's what they should be doing more of. And most of the times when they've done it in the past, it's worked out very well. So I'm kind of willing to give Nintendo the benefit of the doubt, at least until I've played the game, and say that the stuff they've done with Phantom Hourglass is probably fine. I mean, it may not be something you want to be propagated through the rest of the series forever and ever, but at least for one game, it seems like making it control the touchscreen and making it a little easier to get into for people is probably a good thing to try and see what happens. And I think Well, we know for sure that the motivation for doing that came from the fact that Nintendo wanted the game to sell better in Japan, because Zelda, over the years, even though it's been pretty steadily popular in America, in Japan the popularity of the series has gone down pretty dramatically, and so they wanted to revitalize it in Japan, and they've done exactly that. Now, I don't know that they've brought a whole lot of former Zelda fans back to the series with Phantom Hourglass, but reportedly they've at least brought a lot of new people, a lot of women especially, into the series. And I think that's a good thing. I don't know that I want them to do that at the expense of making a game that the rest of us can also enjoy, but I have a feeling that Phantom Hourglass is probably both.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. Well, I think that there's a fine line between saying that there's something is, I don't necessarily even think that there's such a thing as stale if something is good. And I think that when it comes to Phantom Hourglass, at least what I played of it, which was not a ton, I got to play it twice at E3 06. I think that the gameplay works. It's got that Zelda adventuring to it, and it's got a neat graphical style and the overhead style, and but it didn't feel to me like it wasn't Zelda. I think that the place that Nintendo went with Twilight Princess is, it wasn't, like, I don't understand the idea of Zelda being a hardcore game, because to me, Zelda has always been a very steady difficulty, rising difficulty. It always starts so easy, and they talk to you for 2 hours, and then they let you play the game slowly. To me, that's antithetical to a hardcore game. So I think that, Nintendo ought to. Really, what people are complaining about isn't innovation. They're just complaining about difficulty and challenge. And innovation is good sometimes, but if the shoe works and if it fits, just keep wearing it. So,
well, I think he's complaining about both things. He's worried about the possibility of Phantom Hourglass being too easy, and I've heard that from a few other people. So I'm concerned about it as well. Sure. The Zelda games in general are not very hard, obviously, and that doesn't bother me a great deal. I do want it to challenge me and make me think a little bit at some points, but I don't expect to be really stumped by it very frequently, and I don't expect the combat to be terribly difficult. I mean, it wasn't even, you go back to the original NES game, the combat's very simple. You slash your sword. There's not a whole lot to it. So, I think people have this idea that they want Zelda to be more hardcore, and then when they see Nintendo maybe take it a little bit in the opposite direction, they get very upset. But also, I think people are complaining about the innovations that they're putting into this new game because of the touchscreen controls and some of the other stuff. And that kind of stuff, I'm really willing to give Nintendo the benefit of the doubt on, because I think the Zelda series works best when Nintendo goes really crazy with it, and they haven't done that enough over the years. There are too many Zelda games that are really basically the same thing rehashed with new dungeons, and I like it when they go out of the way. One of my favorite Zelda games for sure is Majora's Mask, and I think actually Twilight Princess doesn't get enough credit for being as weird as it is, and I probably said that exact sentence a few weeks ago on the podcast, but you know, even Twilight Princess does some really strange stuff with turning you into the wolf through several mandatory sessions early in the game, and then later on, it kind of messes with the structure a little bit. You think maybe you're at the end of the game, but no, you're not. There's a whole lot of other stuff you have to go through. So I kind of like it when the game surprises you. Like, you feel like there's a formula at work, and you can pretty much predict what's going to happen next. And then you open that treasure chest in the dungeon, and you get a brand new item like the spinner, which you don't even know what it does when you look at it. That's exciting to me, and I like that kind of stuff. But I think Nintendo is overall pretty conservative with the Zelda series. And if you look back at the early games in the series, you can kind of see why that's the case, because the very first sequel to The Legend of Zelda was The Adventure of Link, which is dramatically different from the first game, and it caught a lot of flack for it, and a lot of people still to this day don't really like that game because it's so different, even though I think most people would argue that it is a good game. It is good at what it does, but a lot of people feel like it doesn't feel like Zelda. I mean, you have experience points and level ups and magic spells, and you're talking to people in all these different towns, and it's really strange. It's totally different. And they've never repeated a game like that. They've never tried to do it again. And so after that, they go to the Game Boy Zelda game and the Super Nintendo Zelda game, and even Ocarina of Time. They're all pretty much the same thing. You go through 8 dungeons and you collect pieces of something or other that you need for a story purpose, and they go through basically the exact same formula.
Yeah. Well, what I think Nintendo needs to be innovative is not in control, and I think that might be one of the things that people are concerned about with Phantom Hourglass, is that people are willing to allow innovation in a Zelda game if it comes to what Hyrule looks like, what the rules are of this Hyrule. Majora's Mask, although some people were turned off by that 3-day gameplay, that changed the way we viewed the world, and it changed the way we interacted with it. I don't think that Twilight Princess had anything quite as dramatic. It had some things. The wolf was an aspect, and certainly the first half of Twilight Princess is much more dramatic and cinematic than any other Zelda game. I think that it's okay when we push that. When you push controls, when you try to innovate within how you interact just with Link, that's when I think people get defensive, and I don't blame them. I don't really blame them.
Yeah, and we've seen in the past that Nintendo doesn't always know what's best with Zelda controls. If you look at the E3 2006 demo, when they showed only the Wii version at E3, and Evan, you and I both had a lot of complaints about the way the game controlled at that time, and they improved it quite a bit before the final release. But even then, I don't think any game is perfect, but I think the controls in Twilight Princess are considerably less than perfect. The sword swinging mechanic, I think, is not a terrible idea, but it just doesn't work that well. It's just a button. And
moving your wrist is just a button.
Exactly. I'm replaying Twilight Princess right now, and quite often I will move the remote hoping that it will swing the sword, and it actually doesn't, and I end up having to swing it 4 or 5 times just to get off 1 or 2 sword swings because the timing is off and the responsiveness just isn't adequate. So I'm certainly, I want to encourage Nintendo to try new things with controls, but also want to make sure that they work very, very, very well, because I do want to feel that connection to the character. Yeah. And sometimes in Twilight Princess, I don't. And that's when I kind of step back and look at the game from a meta level, and I start thinking about the controls, and I don't want to do that. I want it to be natural. So
that's why Majora's Mask and Link's Awakening are my favorite Zelda games, because they take the established formula from Link to the Past and from Ocarina of Time, and which were amazing when they first came out. Those two games were very were a great evolution for the series, and they just said, we're going to keep that exact mechanic, and we're going to make this world that you're in and the rules of this world completely different. Those two games are much more dramatic because of that. Much more fun, even, in my mind.
Carl, what do you have to say about all this? We're drowning you out.
It's all good. I talk way too much anyway. I'm going to start out by making Evan happy and drawing parallels, or perpendiculars rather, to the film industry.
Oh.
And say that I think that a lot of game companies don't know when to stop. I think that that in the video game industry we have this mentality that when a game is good, you make a sequel to it. And I think that that is good to a point, but I think in the Zelda series, I think it might just be best for the franchise to stop.
Really?
And that, yeah, I think that it's if you look at what Zelda's trying to accomplish, which is put you in this kind of whimsical world in the role of a mute boy, or basically a young adventurer, which Link definitely embodies to an impossible degree. Basically, the premise is to put a young adventurer into this epic tale, you know, go around exploring, collect items, and basically feel like you're going through a living, breathing world, but still kind of have that that structure to it. And I think that if that is what they're trying to get across in the Zelda's franchise, Twilight Princess is the embodiment of it. And while the controls aren't perfect, you could definitely make them a little better. I don't think that fine-tuning controls is a good enough reason to make another game. And I think that although it's definitely nice they're trying something new with Phantom Hourglass, the fact is, I, much like Johnny, don't really feel compelled to play it because, yes, it's going to be cool, the gameplay is going to be a little different, but at the same time, it is just me as Link being a young adventurer going through this world that is open-ended but still structured. And I think that it's maybe just time for Zelda to say goodbye.
Would you guys be interested in the possibility of, say, the next Zelda for Wii actually being a Zelda game in which you play as Zelda? I'm serious. I mean, she could transform into Sheik, and the structure of the game could be completely different. Certainly, all the action elements would be very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
I would be open to that.
I'd be open for it. Fascinating. In the Twilight Princess world and that kind of, not necessarily that Hyrule, but that graphical style, I'd be very open to it. I would care less about that in a Wind Waker style world, but that's just me.
Right.
But I think that what Carl's talking about here, I have to disagree with the idea that we can't, I don't see genre in games as what it is that you the world that you're in. So I don't see it as we've got fantasy, and I think most people see it this way. They see action genre, RPG genre, they see it in the mechanics of the game. That's the genre. And then the things that you do within that are always branch out from the formal elements, I suppose, if you want to say it that way. So when we see an RPG that's set in a sci-fi universe, that's always a little unique to us. That's surprising to us. But when we see a fantasy game that kind of goes off the rails with its action-adventure style, then when it takes action-adventure and puts that in a fantasy world, I think that's and something beyond a fantasy world, that's great too. So I think the Zelda mechanic should branch out and go other places than just fantasy. And I think that's what it's done in Majora's Mask and in Twilight Princess and in Link's Awakening and in Wind Waker too. There's elements there that are just new. The world can change, the story can change, and the way you interact with it can change. But I think that the mechanics, I don't think that updating mechanics should be anybody's concern. In a 3D world, what we have works. Twilight Princess wasn't a step back, but it wasn't a step forward. What we have works, though.
Maybe I'm just getting tired of being Link.
Maybe, I kind of am too. Would work for you.
Yeah, I think I'm a little tired of Link. I think it would surprise me and please me greatly if I could just play a Zelda game where he didn't inherit a green suit all of a sudden. I mean, like, the way it was handled in Twilight Princess is really bad. You know, all of a sudden he's back in human form, and oh my god, he's wearing the green clothes because they've been passed down to him from the heroes of yore or whatever. I mean, it's just silly. They just appear on him. And right. And even the way Wind Waker contrived this series of events that you know, he was destined to inherit these green clothes of the hero of legend. I'm just kind of sick of that. I wish they would give up some of the sacred institutions of the series and try something new while still keeping the stuff that makes Zelda good. I mean, for goodness sake, the green clothes don't make Zelda a good game.
Yeah.
So let's mess with that a little bit.
We didn't have a mirror shield or light arrows to deal with in Twilight Princess, and I was thankful for that. And they went there.
Fire arrows or ice arrows.
Yeah, I'm glad that they went that far. I would have loved to have seen the what's the name of that rod that creates platforms in Link to the Past?
Oh yeah, yeah.
The Rod of Solomon? I don't remember.
It starts with S, but I can't think of the word right now.
Yeah,
it might be it, yeah.
I would have loved to have seen something like that, but we're talking about if we start... The thing with Zelda is that whenever they make items in a Zelda game, they always make them so that they still fit within the formula. They'll never give you an item that actually changes how you play the game. So when they give you the Wrecking Ball, it just kills enemies faster, or it'll knock off armor, or it'll destroy ice. It doesn't do things that you couldn't do before, it just does them in a different way. So yeah,
they would never give you the power to fly around the world.
No. No. And even the wolf is still using Link's controls. He's just is a different way of being Link. So maybe that's a good thing about the game, in that there's consistency, in that we always know that the world, we're going to interact with it in the same way. But maybe that is evidence that it's getting stale. To me, Majora's Mask, with the fact that you have a notebook and you're going around talking to people and using your skills with getting items and masks as a way to affect the world, that was much more compelling than going to a bunch of dungeons and getting a bunch of stuff, because it never mattered whenever I got outside of that dungeon. That item was done.
Now, would you guys be interested in, and I know this is brought up many times in fanboy discussions, but would you be interested in a World of ZeldaCraft?
A World of ZeldaCraft?
Basically, offering you an MMO where you play as the different races of the Zelda universe.
No.
Even if I was interested in it, it would never happen, so I think the theoretical discussion is...
Well, no. I mean, if we were throwing out the rules of logic out the door, like saying Nintendo would have the foresight to actually do an okay MMO.
Well, Carl, let me tell you why. Can happen. Let me tell you why I'm not interested in that, because that would kind of be based on the idea that what makes the Zelda series attractive are the character designs and the story and the background of the world. And mm-hmm. so then it would be compelling for you to be able to create some random character and just inhabit that world and do things within that world. And I don't think that is at all the appeal of the Zelda franchise. It's not to me, and I hope it's not to anyone else, because those things really aren't that good in the Zelda series. And if you play Zelda for the story, get out of the house more often.
Yeah.
Okay? Play Zelda for the dungeon design, for the puzzles, for the quest to feel like I'm doing something important, and for the surprise of what is the game going to throw at me. And that's why I always like the surprising parts of the game the most.
Well, I'm going to disagree with Johnny just a little bit, because I play Zelda for the adventuring in a generic sense, as well as the as well as Hyrule. I play Zelda for Hyrule, and I talk about this in my Twilight Princess review. To me, Zelda is about going through a world, and it has to be a world. It can't be a nothing. So an MMO in Zelda, in the Zelda world, to me works in that if you kept some of the mechanics there, then you could have you going on those same quests, those same dungeon things, part of something epic. If it was the worst thing about MMOs is that they don't have a consistent storyline for everybody. It's supposed to be create your own. Well, that's stupid. If we had MMOs that actually compelled everybody to go together, working on something, and we're part of this world, I think it could work. If anybody could do it better than anyone else has done it, it would be Nintendo. But the thing is that Nintendo's game design philosophy does not currently allow for an MMO. We'll never see it. And if we do, it'll be so far in the future that the internet's wired into our brains or something dumb like that. So that's why, to me, it's like World of Warcraft. From what I've heard, I've never played it. I've played MMOs before, but from what I've heard, it really perfects the formula. No one plays World of Warcraft for the, as Johnny was saying, for the story necessarily, but they do. I think a lot of people play MMOs for the world that they're in, and Hyrule is a good world in just a design sense. So,
well, I agree that One of the things I do like about Zelda is the world that they create and that you can go explore, but I like it for the fact of I like it for the elements of discovering what the game designers put in that world and what I can do within it with the tools that they give me. And I think that really does not translate very well to MMOs, because MMOs are more about, let's look at this pretty world, but the things you actually do in the world are really based on the people around you and what other people are doing.
I see your point, and I agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so I guess it would be nice if we could get a lot of our listeners to write in with their thoughts on this topic, and maybe we can read some of them next week, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Such a broad topic.
Yes, and we would love to hear what you had to say. So that's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Remember, the first email that we receive will be read as Mike's Crazy Mailbag. And what's going to be the password this week, guys? We need a password.
Password.
Yeah, we need some sort of password, because you need to use the password for this thing to work. It has to be the first email with a password, so we need something catchy.
What if the password is password?
Oh, that's good.
Password is password. There you go. All right, there we go. Solve that puzzle. Anyway, so the first email that we receive with the word password in it will be read aloud on the air. And if you just have anything in general to say about the Zelda franchise that we were talking about today, tell me how wrong I am. Send that to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I am looking forward to your criticisms. You can also go to iTunes and subscribe, and also leave us a review if you so wish. You can also dig the podcast by going to nintendoworldreport.com and clicking on that little link in the article. All right, guys, I think that actually closes us up for the show. Evan, thanks for coming. I know you can only do these sparsely, so anytime you come, it's always a big thing.
Thank you for having me. Sin and Punishment's great. Everybody should buy it.
Yeah. And Johnny, my faithful sidekick, thank you for showing up again.
You're welcome.
I've never seen Johnny ever be anybody's sidekick, so I find that a little hard to believe.
Well, I just let him think
I like
that.
To think so. Yeah. Just let up this feed my ego a little bit by bit.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for stopping by Radio Free Nintendo. See you next week. If you've enjoyed the new music of Radio Free Nintendo, be sure to check out Jason Reach's new album, Rocket No. 9, in stores October 23rd.